keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show, once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Super happy to be back, alive and well on this Monday, February 5th. It's weird to say February, right? I swear, January seemed like an entire year or something. It just seems so long. February 5th, we're alive, we're going live tonight, and I got a special show in store. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl, not so much about the, the people who won the game. Obviously the Eagles won, and I was going against the Patriots because they keep winning and winning and winning, and I'm the type of person that goes for the underdog. But some other stuff that has to do with the Super Bowl. There's three separate angles that I want to talk about tonight, and I wrote about one earlier today. Yesterday we covered a story about the just massive militarization going on in Minneapolis where the game was actually played, and to help me kind of go over what went on with all that, I've got a couple of special guests on the show tonight. I've got Aaron Nelson, and I got Emma. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. I don't want to butcher it.
It's okay. It's Fiala.
Fiala. Okay. That's not so hard. All right. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good.
Awesome. Good to hear. And thankfully, me and Aaron were talking about this a little bit ago, and, there was such a huge presence at the Super Bowl, unlike we've seen in a long time, at least. I guess I didn't look too closely at what was going on last year. But it just seemed like a lot of militarization going on this year. And, earlier, a few months ago when during the World Series, I was down in Houston and I went over to the stadium where they were playing the game. I didn't go to the game or anything, but like it was not like that. The World Series was not like that. It was just, the couple of local cops, there was no checkpoints, there was no military, there was no National Guard, there was... I went and had lunch like a half block from the stadium and I didn't even get checked or searched or anything. But this year at the, at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, it felt like they were maybe acting on some kind of, possibly acting on some kind of active threat or something. Emma, you were down there and you were taking some photos, and I know you helped us get our live stream going. Hopefully everybody listening to the show was able to catch that live stream because there was some protests going on. I guess there was a bunch of stuff going on down in Minneapolis. So we're going to go over that first tonight. Emma and Aaron, what did you guys see down in Minneapolis?
Well, I went down there on Saturday to photograph an event of U.S. Bank protests, since it was being held at the U.S. Bank Stadium. It was a good time to draw attention to what U.S. Bank has been doing with funding pipelines again lately. So when I was done photographing that, I thought I would take the opportunity to walk around and see what the militarization of police was looking like. I had driven downtown a couple of times before and saw a little bit of it, but knew that there were a lot of events and also protests scheduled on Saturday, so that things would probably be heightened a little bit and similar to how they'd be on Sunday. So when I first got downtown, I had been prepared by the group that I was photographing. We met ahead of time to talk about a little bit of a game plan, and we were told you can't bring backpacks downtown. There's going to be security checks where they have to look at your ID. They might confiscate things. Try to look normal and look like you're blending in, because this was a group of pipeline protesters, not necessarily Super Bowl fans, so we didn't really look the part so much. But when we got down there,
we weren't protesting out there in Eagles jerseys, basically.
No, actually, a couple of people did have Eagles hats on, I noticed on the way, and that was good, but I didn't have the forethought to look like a Super Bowl fan. But but once we got down there, there wasn't a major check initially to walk in. So I had a large backpack with me because I had all of my camera equipment with me. But we did see right when we got into one of the main areas where events were, which is pretty far from the stadium, but a main area with like sponsored events and stuff, that there were a lot of militarized police immediately. But because we were trying to get in and get right to our protest destination, I didn't look at them and I didn't photograph them right away because I didn't want to draw attention to us. But they were right away. They had vests on, they had camo clothing on, some of them had weapons, and there were probably about 8 to 10 of them. And then as we got closer into where we were going to meet for the protest, there was a security check, ironically, at the exact location of the protest. So they were randomly searching people's bags, but they were still letting people through with their backpacks, which was convenient for us.
Interesting. So they were, some of the protesters were getting searched then?
Yes. They looked through my bag. So I showed, I just have camera equipment to photograph, obviously photographable events that are happening. So that wasn't a problem. But the two people that came in with bullhorns in their backpacks didn't get searched, thankfully. So they made it in with the bullhorns. People who came in with larger banners and art, because banners
they said
also...
banners were banned.
Yeah, banners were banned from being in those locations also, but they wore them like underneath their shirts, wrapped around their bodies, so that the searches weren't thorough enough to...
Well, didn't you sneak it in with an older man?
Yes, there... I have a photo of an older man, probably in his 70s or so, that had our largest banner wrapped around his chest, which was amusing to see.
Interesting. The things people can do to, you know, kind of that. It's interesting the lengths they went. I'm not sure if I still have you guys. It seems like the audio may have cut, but the question I had is, so what was that? What was this protest all about?
This protest was, I'm associated with a climate advocacy group called Minnesota 350. It's part of the bigger 350.org organization. And there's a lot of pipeline stuff that happens in Minnesota and the surrounding states. Lots of pipelines trying to get through, lots of pipelines that already exist. And lots of indigenous land that's threatened by these pipelines.
That's interesting, because you wouldn't think, you know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, the pipelines are all going through these areas up there in the far north. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think, because it's like, oh yeah, the oil's down in Texas, and, you know, but the pipelines run through a bunch of those states up there, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the oil that runs through the pipelines around here are coming from the north. There's all of the oil fields, like the Bakken oil fields and the tar sands that are all in the Dakotas and north in Canada. So then they're coming through here, and then they go down. There's a point that they meet in Illinois that's a major like kind of routing area, and they go from different places from there. So there's been, the indigenous people in Minnesota have been fighting this stuff for a long, long time, and it's gaining more traction among other supporters of the environment more recently. But we also have U.S. Bank's headquarters is in Minnesota, and it's in Minneapolis. So 8 months ago, I think about 8 months ago, U.S. Bank, after our organization and others pressured them to divest, they said that they were not going to support companies that are funding pipelines, and they're just going to divest from that whole thing, which was a major victory. But then they've since fallen back on that. I guess they got a good deal or were pressured or whatever happened, but they've decided to invest again, specifically in Energy Transfer Partners, which is the company responsible for the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Bayou Bridge Pipeline down in Louisiana, which is also a significant fight going on right now. So the pressure that they decided to put on Saturday was, there were a bunch of reasons, because they fell back on their word to divest, but also because the Super Bowl is being held at the U.S. Bank Stadium, so U.S. Bank's name is everywhere, because the headquarters is here in Minneapolis, and because their headquarters is on a street that's called Nicollet Mall, which is a pedestrian and public transportation road in downtown Minneapolis, which happened to be the road that was closed for a thing called Super Bowl Live, which is where all of the main tourist type events were, where all of the stages were that people were performing. They turned one road into a thing for skiers. They had snow and a hill that went over an intersection, so the skiers didn't have to stop at red lights. they had snowmobiles doing tricks and crazy things that don't normally happen in a downtown of a city. But all of this was happening right by the U.S. Bank headquarters. So it was a great opportunity to get some eyes and hopefully some press on the issue.
A lot of people who had no idea any of that was going on just kind of stumbled upon it randomly and probably learned some things.
Yeah, you know, you get a bunch of tourists from out of town walking by. We've done a few targeted protests like that here in San Diego, you know, where you do it like in a tourist area. And we did one. It was one of those shocking protests where we were like waterboarding a guy. One of our friends volunteered for us to waterboard him. I don't know if you guys remember that protest. It was like against the, it was when all the torture stuff was coming out, mm-hmm. you know, the torture files. And ironically, you know, Dianne Feinstein was trying to get those files released. But yeah, I mean, these are pretty effective protests. And then of course, you had our live stream up. There was a few other live streamers there and we got some decent amount of views on those videos. So, so, you know, that was pretty good. And there was some other protests going on too. At least yesterday during the Super Bowl, there was, some Black Lives Matter protests, and a coalition of people that were out there trying to raise awareness about police brutality and stuff. And this is kind of a good segue into the next topic I want to talk about here, because, you know, 17 people were arrested. I guess they were blocking a like the light rail. I don't know what you call it out there.
Yeah,
but I guess the activists were blocking access to the light rail for like 2 hours, and then 17 people wound up getting arrested. And of course, you know, just to kind of make my point here, you know, these people were peacefully protesting, you know, doing a blockade, basically, and 17 people were arrested. You know, and of course, you know, again, like we were saying, the Super Bowl, it's a great place to do protests. There's a ton of people there. There's a ton of cameras everywhere. A bunch of tourists from out of town. It's a good place to kind of, you know, it, maybe if they haven't seen it before, they'll see it now, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing, you know, Black Lives Matter probably had the same thing in mind as the protesters that you were covering, Emma. You know, just it's the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. A bunch of people, you know, and so they're doing their thing. And then, you know, 17 people arrested. And then we see what happened with, you know, after the game and in Philadelphia, it went crazy down there. And these fans turn Philly into a riot. And there's only been three people arrested. I mean, you guys have probably seen the video. Everybody listening has probably seen a bunch of these videos and pictures from last night where it was just chaos, fires lit, places getting looted. I mean, they broke into a store and started having a food fight. A car was flipped. Fires were set. I mean, a bunch of stuff happened. Like, basically, honestly, I mean, this riot last night seemed to me like it was bigger than what we saw in Ferguson and in Baltimore. Like, it seemed like more damage was done.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, somehow, only three people were arrested. And so this is kind of the disparity that I'm seeing is, you know, a peaceful protest goes on in Minneapolis with Black Lives Matter, 17 are arrested, and then Philly gets burnt, you know, and looted and rioted in, and only three people, you know, get arrested. And it's like, wait, that doesn't seem right. It seems like, you know, it seems like there's a difference here. Why aren't people getting arrested for starting a riot in Philly, and 17 peaceful people are arrested in Minneapolis? And then you start looking at the news coverage, and I wrote an article about this today. By the way, before we go on, if anybody wants to look, we had some great coverage on the militarization down in Minneapolis. Aaron and Emma actually helped write the article. Super Bowl security has turned Minneapolis into a military police state. So it was our top story yesterday. Some, you know, on the ground footage, some investigations. I mean, these guys even had helicopters out there, right? They were like testing for radiation in the sky. Yeah. I mean, it really seemed like they were acting on some kind of intelligence. It's like, okay, we're expecting something. They have a helicopter measuring radiation up there. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think there was actually the Department of Homeland Security, I think, left a top secret manual or something for a military drill that they're running, simulating biological warfare attack, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I just saw that. What the hell was up with that?
Well, ironically, it was kind of crazy the way it happened, that somebody left their packet of, like, the sensitive information that was for official use only. They left it on an airplane before the Super Bowl in the, like, pocket in the seat in front of them. And a CNN employee found it. Of all people to find it, somebody that works for CNN found it, and they didn't release anything about it until afterwards because they were concerned that it could cause some sort of, like, security breach or just something. But it makes me wonder if part of the heightened security and the intense response and surveillance was maybe part of a drill, if they were using the event to just practice having all of them coordinating, because this has only been the third Super Bowl that was classified as a national special security event, so it's not normal. Something made it be bigger.
Yeah.
So I wonder, that documentation just made me wonder if it maybe had something to do with practicing or a drill.
You know what I've been noticing? I mean, we went a long time. I don't remember, you know, before Ferguson happened, I can't recall the exact time the last time the National Guard was brought out. But since then, the National Guard has been brought out like a bunch of times.
Yes.
And it's been in the riots, you know, it's been in Ferguson, it's been in Baltimore. I think down in, was it in Louisiana? I can't remember if it was in Louisiana. They were brought out to Standing Rock. It's been like a bunch of times just in the past few years, right? And then today, you know, or yesterday, they bring out the National Guard for the damn Super Bowl. I mean, come on, it's a sporting event. Do you really need the military on U.S. soil setting up checkpoints and stuff? Like, it's
wasn't just for one day.
It was all week. They had started setting up, I think, on the 26th of January, and not just the National Guard, the FBI and ICE. For whatever reason, ICE was there, and
I mean, they had their staging area all the way in St. Paul.
Yep. Yeah, I happened to stumble upon their staging area, like, totally by chance when I was going to a sledding thing with my kids. I was like, wait a minute, what's over here at the state fairgrounds? And I found two huge white tents and a ton of Humvees of all, like, green ones. And
you couldn't get back to
it. I tried to go back to it yesterday to photograph it again, but they had it blocked off a lot more than the first time. The first time I saw it, I took some photos with my cell phone, and I wanted to go back and get better pictures yesterday. But that was like not close to the Super Bowl, so it was interesting that they had that all the way over there.
Yeah, the Twin Cities are, it's kind of weird. I'm new to the location, but Minneapolis and St. Paul are like a mile apart from each other.
Yeah, they border each other. They're right next to each other.
They've just kind of grown big and like kind of become connected, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because the downtowns are not close together, but the cities themselves, the actual borders touch each other. So a lot of people don't quite get it. That's why it's called the Twin Cities, I guess. It's two cities next to each other.
Makes sense. Kind of like the Dallas-Fort Worth area too. Same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not one to be too inclined on conspiracy theories and stuff, but I think you're onto something about the idea that they're just like normalizing this really militaristic policing presence. Really, you know, it's not like they're army guys and they're out there, you know, hiding in desert camo and shit, but it's just like a military police presence. Mm-hmm. Right,
and it's people just taking selfies with military police, like it's
a thing.
That was so bizarre for me to see. People were getting pictures of themselves in front of the Humvees, and then pictures with the guys with like their weapons on and stuff. And personally, I had feelings I didn't expect to feel when I was there, because I knew I'd walk past a Humvee and then realized like this might be, because it's from Hennepin County or it's from the Minnesota National Guard, that this might be one of the exact same ones that I photographed up on the hill at Standing Rock. Like, the two different feelings, like, it was kind of hard to reconcile. Like, there's people here that are, like, so happy that these guys are here and that are keeping us safe. But then when I was at Standing Rock, it was the exact same people, but they were keeping other people safe from us. Like, we were the threat. It was a weird thing for me to see. I didn't expect those feelings, but I did not like that.
It's so crazy to think that now we're starting to get like on a it seems now like every few months they roll out the National Guard for this reason or that reason, or you know, something happens or a natural disaster or a protest, or now the Super Bowl, you know. It really does seem like. And again, I'm not, you got, everybody listening knows I'm not the one to be inclined to these kind of crazy conspiracy theories, but it definitely seems like they're trying to normalize the idea of a military presence on the street, and there's no other way to really put that, but that it's very similar to martial law, you know. And to me, it's very concerning that people kind of just are like, oh, cool, the National Guard's out here, and they got Humvees, and they got dudes, you know, presumably on, you know, weapons sitting on top of the Humvees, and, you know, they got all these advanced surveillance things going up, and it's just like people are, like, almost, like, celebrating it, like, oh, this is cool, you know?
Yep.
And there was a time in our history where it was explicitly said, well, we don't want to have the military on the streets anymore because that's a really troubling thing. We don't want to have them occupying domestic territories because it scares the shit out of people. And now it's like, oh, this is reassuring. A bunch of military guys are occupying, you know, Minnesota right now. That's pretty cool.
And they also set up command centers to have surveillance on the entire local population, like watching thousands of live cameras and monitoring social media and just bad shit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I'll tell you what. You know, the United States has become this. The United States has begun embracing a kind of very militaristic attitude ever since 9/11. And because 9/11 was such a traumatic event and it was broadcast so widely. And, you know, there was even studies later on that said, well, maybe people got PTSD just from watching that traumatic shit replayed over and over and over again on CNN or whatever. You know, 9/11 changed this country, and it changed from a time where in the 90s we were kind of just like, yeah, dude, you know, we're coming out of the 80s and the Soviet Union fell and everybody's kind of like, all right, dude, we're going to do this. We're going to do tech and we're going to do internet and everything's chill. People, you know, people started talking about legalizing marijuana and everything seemed fine. All of a sudden 9/11 comes along and it flips from, you know, an America that's relatively at peace. I mean, of course, we still had the things going on that, you know, the Desert Storm. There was other things where the U.S. was out electioneering and intervening. But we were at a time of, like, relative peace, and then all of a sudden it's like, boom, militarization, everything. and sacrifice your freedom, sacrifice your, you know, rights for the cause of national security. And it seemed like because 9/11 was such a traumatic event, a lot of people were, maybe not a lot, maybe most people were just like, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. let's do it. I mean, I remember personally when I was a freshman in high school when 9/11 happened.
Me too.
And I couldn't wait for the U.S. to start bombing Iraq. I was like, yeah, dude, like those assholes did this shit to us. You know, like I was totally like fully in the belief that Iraq was responsible for it, you know. And of course, now what I know, and after learning a bunch of stuff that wasn't taught to me in school, I know that Iraq wasn't actually responsible for 9/11 and that we probably shouldn't have done what we, you know, we shouldn't have had the Iraq war to begin with. But that didn't matter. The mind state had switched to this like pro-militarization mindset. And right now, all that stuff that at first was outward, okay, we're going to go bomb Iraq, we're going to go do Afghanistan, we're going to do Libya, we're going to do Syria, we're going to do Yemen, and we're going to do Pakistan, all these other places. Now, all those things start coming home to roost where we find out the NSA has been spying on people. We find out the military has been selling all of its excess gear to the, you know, to the police departments. And we find out that Congress is like cutting away at our rights left and right, wherever they can. And then the hardest part is finding out, you know, doing what we do with the anti-media, working in this media field, really digging in deep in these issues. Maybe the hardest part is finding out that people really don't give a shit, right? Generally mm-hmm. speaking, people are just like apathetic to it. They're just like, oh, like you said, Emma, they're out there taking selfies with the National Guard mm-hmm. and their Humvees and shit.
Yep.
That to me is what really blows my mind. And no, but sad. That's also, you know, that's also why we keep doing what we're doing, because people, you know, if they're not taught anything different, they won't realize it's not a good thing. You know, there's a reason why we have the idea of posse comitatus and the idea of, you know, martial law being a bad idea, because it is, and it leads to a bunch of really nasty consequences. But maybe people have forgot. You know, it's been a long time since, you know, they've needed to pull out martial law and all that stuff. It's been a long time. Maybe people have forgotten how much of a horrible idea that is. And that's why, you know, that's why it was so awesome that you guys were able to put together this article about what's going on out there, because otherwise people may not even know or care to know. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that stuff wasn't necessarily, I mean, I watched a little bit of the coverage of the Super Bowl at home, like some of, I didn't watch much of the Super Bowl, but I watched some of the events when they were like, oh, this is what's happening down on Nicollet Mall, this is what's happening downtown. And never once did you see the militarized police or any of that. That wasn't shown to the regular person that's tuning into the Super Bowl across the country. So unless you were there or you were seeking out something like the anti-media who's showing that to you, it just wasn't around. So I was glad to help take part in exposing that.
It's because part of the narrative.
They had it, like, it was interesting. They had the Humvees and they have everybody stationed, like, just slightly off of the main roads that were, had most of the media attention on them. So it was like, it was almost strategic just where they had it, that it wasn't going to show up on the news and it wasn't going to show up in the newspaper pictures and that kind of stuff.
Interesting. Well, you know, I'm glad we got it out there, and, you know, now people know. Now people know that they're starting to roll out National Guard for just whatever reason they want, whether it's a Super Bowl or next it's going to be a game. Next it's going to just be your local sports game, dude, your local football team, your local baseball team or whatever, and they're going to roll out National Guard, and it's getting normalized, and that's not a good thing. We don't want to normalize military occupation of domestic streets, because that's a very anti-freedom you know, tactic that governments use. It's you know, these are the things authoritarians do. They occupy with yes. the military and on the domestic front. You know, this is not mm-hmm. something that we want. If we're going to try to be preserving any semblance of freedom in this country, we want to be very critical of military deployments
yes.
on U.S. soil. Aaron, what were you going to say, dude?
I was just going to say, just noticing how people were justifying it and defending it on social media, was just like, well, what if? What if there's an attack? What if, like, would you regret taking that stance then? Like, we need the military to protect us from a potential attack that might happen. And if they weren't there and it happened, like, well, shame on you then for thinking that they shouldn't be there. And it's just, it's all this hypothetical preemptive action. Like, there's no, we should not militarize our streets because maybe somebody, I mean, who took the fall for 9/11 anyway?
It's a bad thought, you know? I mean, anyone could go into anybody's house at any time and kill you. Like, I could be on the radio show right now and someone could walk in and shoot me in the head. But does that mean I want to hire a cop to stand in my living room all the time and, you know, and make sure that nobody comes in? Or do I want to live my life a little bit more freely, a little more privately, and a little bit more, you know, not trying to control everything that goes on around me? And this is the idea that is being spread here with this normalization, is that, well, if we just control everything that is everywhere, then we'll be fine. And I think that's the same idea they use on foreign policy. It's like, well, if we could just go to Iraq, and if we had only left troops behind, ISIS would have never happened. And people are so afraid after 9/11 that they just want someone to, you know, keep them safe, you know, and of course, everybody, including the president and all the fear mongering and the State of the Union speech and the media, and how they're always on the alarm with any kind of minor attack. And then also at the same time, ignoring the ones that go on elsewhere, like, you know, suicide bombings in Afghanistan and Iraq, and those not really, no one really giving a shit about that around here.
Well, and even ignoring stuff that happens here, like mass shootings by American citizens that have been radicalized by other American citizens, like nothing from the outside, nothing, like, there's no fear in the media of those things. There's fear of these outside things that actually are non-existent, that, like, we caused in the first place, but that fear has been so successful because now people want to be protected against the idea that another country is going to attack us. And
people believe that it's possible that our goal, we were going to eliminate terrorism. There'll be no more terror in the world. Like, that's the end goal. And it's just, it's never going to happen. So it's a permanent war that's just never going to end.
Yeah. I mean,
meanwhile, for 17 years now, the president has emergency powers after 9/11. It keeps getting extended. No one ever talks about that. Like, we're under a state of emergency still.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm there. I'm here. You guys, your audio cut out for a second there. You're good, though. No, I thought someone was coming in to kill me right now in the studio. No, I'm just kidding.
See, the fear works.
All right, so let's shift a little bit over, because look, there's a few different angles to cover here with the Super Bowl. The second thing I want to talk about is the article I wrote today, and, you know, Aaron helped me come up with the title: "America, Your Hypocrisy on Philadelphia's Super Bowl Riot is Fucking Outrageous." So basically, look, what I hinted at earlier: 17 peaceful protesters arrested in Minneapolis, Black Lives Matter protesters. Three rioters in Philly after they lit the damn city on fire, right? And look, we've all seen the people online when these riots happen, you know, in Ferguson, in Baltimore, and everybody's like, oh my God, I can't believe they're destroying their own neighborhoods, and, you know, rioting is, you know, so bad, and the entire conversation becomes about rioting and not about the actual reason why people were protesting, and you know, the police brutality and the institutionalized racism in this country. And of course, many of our people on the ground that were at Ferguson and places like that were saying that, you know, people weren't rioting just to riot. They were actually rioting in response to being provoked by, again, of course, militarized police, you know, staying kind of on the topic here. But there's a stark difference between the reaction. So people, when today, last night and this morning, when they're rioting in Philadelphia, it's just, I don't see hardly anybody out there saying, oh my God, I can't believe people are destroying their own neighborhoods and they're smashing
windows, streets.
They're blocking streets and ambulances must have been trying to go through. You know?
Yes, exactly.
But like, I don't see anybody out there in this outrage like, oh my God, I can't believe these people in Philadelphia are doing this stuff.
Yeah, they should really get jobs.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. And then at the same time, so everybody's so quick to condemn rioting and the difference, of course, the big difference is that people are rioting in Philadelphia for the Eagles, which basically has no effect on their own lives. They're not doing it for a righteous cause. They're just happy that their team won. And look, I'm not actually criticizing the fact that these guys rioted. I get it. Like, the crowd mentality overcomes you and you do some crazy shit. There was some guy that ate horse shit. Did you guys see that? Some guy ate horse
shit. No.
One of the Philly fans literally, like, the crowd cheered him on and he ate horse shit. And everyone was like cheering it on, like it was like the greatest thing for them at the time. I'm not really condemning the fact that these guys went and did their rioting down in Philly. Like, whatever, dude. Like, I get it. Like, things happen and the crowd mentality overcomes you and you do some dumb shit. You wake up the next day and you're like, damn, I hope my mom doesn't see me on the news, you know? But just the hypocrisy of the way it's treated, not only just with regular people that are reacting to it on social media, people that talk shit about the Ferguson riots and then don't say anything about the Philly riots, fine. Like, okay. But also the media responses are just ridiculous, dude. I mean, it was, you know, if you look at CNN and if you look at some of the coverage that they've done with Wolf Blitzer and their anchors and all that stuff, I mean, it's very opinionated. It's very much like, I can't believe this is happening. It's 2017. How are people rioting? It's been, you know, 40 years since Martin Luther King was around, and you know, this can't be, you know, happening now. And then when it comes to a sports riot, I mean, I'm reading you the main headline from CNN right now. Quote, after Eagles Super Bowl win, the Philly police scanner was pure poetry. That was the CNN headline. And they're basically just making an article about how goofy it was that a bunch of shit was going on and the police were freaking out over the radio because they were trying to contain all this, you know, all the rioting and stuff. And CNN was just like, oh, that's so funny. But when people were rioting for, you know, because someone got killed by a cop and there was no accountability, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe these people are doing this. It's so bad. It's such a horrible thing. You know, I was seeing this develop in the morning. And everybody was just calling it the Fox News headline, Super Bowl celebration in Philadelphia turns rowdy after Eagles win championship. And then the local ABC affiliate called it rowdy celebrations. I mean, there's a stark difference between the way they cover sports riots and the way they cover activist riots, which, again, many times are provoked by the actual cops. They're not even riots by design. They just happen to be that way because they fire tear gas into a crowd and everyone gets set off. You know? And so it's just, to me, it's just so ridiculous that people allow this to dictate the narrative. I mean, it's so patently obvious at this point. And I saw it happening and I had to write about it. You know, I don't write as many articles anymore, but at times, you know, you just get called to it and it was just like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. They're acting like nothing is going on. And like I said earlier, you know, this riot in Philly, I'm looking at all the videos that I saw, it looks like it's more damaging to property than the riots in Ferguson and Baltimore.
That's what I was thinking, is it kind of puts into perspective how in control, like, they didn't get out of control. If you're comparing a riot over a Super Bowl win, a football game, sports, to a riot with a cop killed our local friend, like, they were actually really, they controlled themselves compared to people just freaking out for no reason at all.
Yeah, they were pretty tame. I mean, yeah. No one even died in the police riots. You know what I mean? No cops got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
You know if the... Was tear gas deployed on the Philly rioters?
No, I don't think it was. No. No, I didn't see any reports of it, so...
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, so they just kind of said, all right, go ahead.
Well, personally, I haven't been involved in, like, a huge protest that had a lot of, like, negative police presence. I mean, I was at Standing Rock, so I experienced that, but I wasn't involved when it got, like, really intense. But I've been in protests where we, like, went on the highway and had a lot of police around us. Or other small ones that were, like, the one-year anniversary of Jamar Clark being murdered in North Minneapolis. We were a small group, and we were marching around his neighborhood, and there was a huge police presence, and a helicopter followed us for, like, an hour. But then also, I'm from Chicago, so I was in Chicago when the White Sox won the World Series, when the Cubs did, and I went out, and I was in the, I guess, celebration or riot at that time, and never once remember seeing police officers. People were jumping on cars, and I was in a car trying to leave and had to just get out and walk because it was impossible to drive anywhere. There was no police blocking off streets, no police directing anything, no police stopping people from breaking things. And to experience that myself, the difference between being in a teeny tiny protest that was like 50 people being followed by a helicopter and then being in this massive crowd in the middle of night of the night of people celebrating it's interesting to have experienced that myself. And to see that difference. So it's been happening for years, really. But
it has. Yes. Look, I got a quick list here. I'm not gonna take too much time on it. But look, I got a list of some of the more notable sports riots throughout the last, 60 years or so. 1968, Detroit, 200 arrests. 1971, Pittsburgh. 1982, San Francisco, 125 people injured. 1984 in Detroit, 80 people injured. 1984 in Manhattan, Kansas, 24 people injured. 1985, San Francisco, 183 arrested. 1986, Montreal, 28 arrests. 1986, Kansas again, 21 arrests. 1989, San Francisco, 90 arrests. 1990, San Francisco, 14 arrests, 14 injured. 1990 in Detroit, the Pistons, hundreds of people injured, 141 arrests. 1991, Chicago, 100 arrests, 2 people injured. 1992, Chicago for the Bulls, over 1,000 people arrested and 190 injured.
Whoa.
1993, Dallas, 18 injured. 1993 in Montreal, 168 injured. 1994, Vancouver, 200 injured. I mean, look... They keep going and going and going all the way up until recent times. Now, in the more recent ones, there haven't been as many people injured. But back in the 90s and 80s, I don't know. I guess they got a lot crazier. But look, here's the point I want to make. These sports riots are a hell of a lot of a bigger problem than anything having to do with police accountability, with Ferguson, with Baltimore, with the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a way, way bigger problem, yet at the same time, nobody gives a shit on social media. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, it's just, celebrations got out of hand. And, of course, the same message is echoed in the media. It's just, rowdy celebrations, people who were drunk, and, it's just innocent fun or whatever. This is some serious shit. I mean, hundreds of people and thousands, actually, throughout the time that this is probably, since they've been taking, count of all these horrible riots that happen after sporting events, they probably date, like, I mean, the list I have only goes back to 1968. It probably goes back way further than that, too. And to me, it's just like, well, why is it that we make a big deal and go through all these motions to condemn and bring out the National Guard and do all these, militarize the shit out of the place to stop, people who are activists fighting for a cause? And then, when something happens like last night in Philly, it's just like, It's just, you know, they won the game. They were happy. They flipped a few cars. They smashed a few windows. They broke a few buildings. And, you know, they looted a few stores. Ah, no big deal. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, it blows my mind that it's like, okay, that's the reality we're in. That's the reality we're, I mean, is this it? Like, what do you guys think? I mean, what do you think of this stuff?
Well, everything you're saying is reminding me of the way that the media acts with people who've done stuff wrong and the color of their skin generally, that men who are white and in their 20s or 30s are often referred to as boy or like a good kid, regardless of the crimes that they did. But then actual kids who are black are called a man or an adult, or Mike Brown was no angel. Tamir Rice looked like a giant guy. There's a big divide in, like, boys will be boys and diminishing their crime when they're white or they're of a certain stature, and then the other side is treated completely differently in the media. It seems like kind of the same kind of divide.
Definitely. I think there's a huge racial disparity. And I mentioned it in my article, you know, like the outrage with Kaepernick. I mean, you know, we're still on this football topic, right? The outrage with Kaepernick is just like, oh my God, you know, he kneeled down, you know, and of course he wasn't given a job. And of course that's a different story. I mean, maybe I like Kaepernick when he was in his prime, and I know he was not as good as he once was, but many people think that he was not hired in the NFL because of his protest, you know, and there's so much outrage.
And, I mean, he should at least be a backup.
Yeah, and that protest really got under Trump's skin and got under a lot of people's skin, caused a huge conversation about the troops and about patriotism and about all bunch of stuff. I mean, I think Kaepernick had the best protests of 2017. I mean, and he didn't even, like, I don't even think he played in 2017, but he was like the most talked about activist in 2017. And I think it was an amazingly successful, effective campaign that he did. And it went viral and a bunch of other people did it. But people are like, oh my God, you know, Kaepernick is so disrespectful to the troops and he's, you know, so unpatriotic and he hates America and blah, 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 blah.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
And then
disrespecting the flag, apparently.
And then these dudes that are in a drunken stupor last night in Philadelphia go around wrecking the place, and it's like, ah, no big deal. But, you know, I think you're right. I mean, it has a lot to do with just the racial disparity and the fact that people just, you know, this country sees black people as a threat. I mean, they treat them like criminals. And then when it's a bunch of white dudes looting a city because their team won, it's like, ah, they're just a bunch of boys being boys. You know,
yeah,
and
that's
just
what it makes me think of, the boys will be boys kind of thing. And that happens even the rape culture in our country, that happens all the time too. Like, boys will be boys. There's certain things that are dismissed because that's just the way it is. And it often goes along with boys will be boys.
People take their cues from the media, too. I remember Baltimore, when stuff was going down there a couple of years ago, or however long ago it was, like going to CNN.com in the middle of the night, and it's just like, Baltimore under flames, like, this city falls apart. That's not the headline we're getting for Philadelphia, but Philadelphia was worse. Yeah. So people just, they rely on the media to form their opinion and their narrative on what's actually happening in reality. So I think that's the main thing that causes it.
And
people
that's why we're here.
They need someone to tell them what to believe.
That's why we're here, right? So we can counter these narratives, get the people in the know, and, you know, let's switch topics here real quick, because there's a couple more things I want to talk about. The third thing that has to do with the Super Bowl that is really not talked about at all is this epidemic of sex trafficking. That goes on, and I know Derek did an investigation on it. I think it was either last year in 2016, because I think they have the Super Bowl down there in Houston. Because the Super Bowl attracts all these rich dudes from all over the world that want to come see the big game, you know, it's one of the biggest games in the world, right? And so all these rich fools from all over the place come into Minneapolis, and then they have a demand for sex with, you know, people who are many times basically sex slaves. And you know, this is just like now become a part of the Super Bowl. It's like, oh yeah, Super Bowl's happening, and so there's going to be a bunch of sex slaves down at, you know, in Minneapolis. It's like, what the fuck is going on? How is this okay? Like, how is this like? Yeah. Ah, it's ridiculous.
I think the Super Bowl is the biggest like sex trafficking event of the year. And Minnesota actually happens to be the second highest state in the country for online sex trafficking. So I imagine that that combination of those two things was not a good thing. I haven't heard too much about it, but there was a lot of stuff that I saw in my circles going around kind of prepping people for it and warning people, especially within the indigenous communities, because they're a lot more likely to be victimized when it comes to that.
Yeah, that is something we have to look into, because I'm sure, yeah, a bunch of bad stuff went down.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, it's horrible, man. And you know, they, mm-hmm. all these rich assholes come in from out of town, and they expect the world, and they want to have women at their fingertips and stuff. I mean, it's just the most... it's just the most ridiculous part of the Super Bowl.
And that's exactly why it still exists. You said it's the rich people. It's the people in control of everything that are the people that do this. And it's known that it's also something that runs rampant within a lot of police forces too. So it's the people that we trust to fix it and to stop it. And the people who are on the top of everything that are the people that are doing it. So that's, it seems like something that shouldn't exist anymore, that should be easier to stop, but it's the people that we would trust to stop it, and the people with the money are the ones who are doing it, so that's why it's still mm-hmm. a thing.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and these guys have a way of doing it where hardly anyone gets caught. You know, I've known people personally connected to my family that have been victimized by sex trafficking, underage girls, dude, like, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's they get them hooked on drugs, and you know, it's just mm-hmm. all downhill from there. It's just a really bad situation, and it follows the Super Bowl around, you know. And mm-hmm. there's been a lot of talk this last year about this topic. You know, the Me Too thing blew up like crazy, and the sexual assault thing has been, you know, being talked about finally. And it infects the highest people up. Like you said, it's the people who are supposed to be trustworthy and taking care of things and taking care of stuff. And, you know, I'm sure some of these assholes that were dealing, that were the militarized police down there were partaking in this kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's just such a huge, huge problem in the U.S. that needs to be tackled. I mean, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier with Black Lives Matter and stuff. I mean, this is part of it. You know, it's slavery continued on. It never ended. It just took on new forms. And the Super Bowl just attracts the worst of them, you know, and that's just, you know, it's just horrible that, you know, that kind of stuff still goes on, but it does. You know, we need to mm-hmm. keep talking about it and keep finding out, investigating it, so maybe we can put an end to it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I know there was another topic I wanted to segue into, but I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think we should start going into the economy stuff, because, we've been talking about crypto on this show for a long time. And I think the crypto market's still above what it was when we first start talking about it. Yeah. I'm sure it is. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, definitely.
But, the crypto market obviously has been going through some rough times in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But the bigger story here is the damn stock market, which took its worst daily beating ever today, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, look, we posted some articles. Aaron, you actually sent me them, so we're going to repost them on the Facebook page. We've been actually warning about a bubble forming, basically. And we've got a great economy writer, Sean Bradley, who really covers some really great angles for us on economic stuff. But we've been warning about this for several months. I mean, it's not a big surprise. I mean, the market's been going, it's been overheating for a long time. And it's been just going up and up and up and up and up. And it can only go up so long, right? And it's interesting because housing prices just reached, housing prices just re-reached their all-time high. And, you know, people familiar with the stock market, you know, analysis and that, you know about like the double top and, you know, the reaching the all-time high twice like that. We could be in for a perfect storm of bad economic news. You got the stock market taking a beating. You got the government increasing the debt, which Trump, when he ran, of course, was a huge critic of the debt and the deficits, and we need to stop, you know, we owe trillions and trillions of dollars. How many times did Trump say trillions and billions of dollars while he was running for president? And now he gets up there and he's like, oh yeah, we're going to borrow an extra $1 trillion this year. You know, and you guys aren't even going to question me twice about it because you're all conservatives, and when a Republican is in office, you don't say anything about the debt. So you got a huge amount of borrowing. You've got all these years of quantitative easing coming to a they're starting to try to wind that down because the inflation is getting out of control. And you got all these other factors having to do with the dollar and the de-dollarization. You know, everybody's starting to look towards China for economic stability and stuff like that. And you've got kind of a perfect storm here. And again, going back to the housing prices, it's at a double top, which is, in you're looking at it from an analysis standpoint, a double top in a stock market is a very bad look. It's not a good it's a very bad thing. It means that there's a very good chance that the market's going to go down hard. So we're going to have to see what happens tomorrow. There's been some signals coming out already that the stock market is looking bad for tomorrow. Aaron, you sent me one. I mean, what do you think we're going to see tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's going to open. I think the futures are starting to shape up. It's looking like it's going to open with a big loss. And I don't see any reason to think it's going to recover because usually the people kind of, the herd mentality is going to take form. Everyone's starting to panic, thinking that everything's going to crash, everything's going to sell even more. And I think it's going to be a snowball effect here pretty soon.
That's what it seems like to me. So, you know, we're going to see what happens tomorrow. It could be a bloodbath on all fronts. It's also going to be interesting to see if there is a stock market correction, how the crypto markets are going to react to that, if the crypto markets are going to go up.
Yeah,
I tend to think that they will, but, you know, markets are crazy and you never know what's going to happen. So we're going to see that. We're going to see the housing market. Check out some of the stuff. If you want to look more into some economic stuff, go check out some of the stuff from Sean Bradley on the Anti-Media, because we've been talking about these, and it's not just, here's the thing, in 2008 it was the housing bubble. Right now, kind of what we're dealing with here is we got a housing bubble that was refilled. They kind of sealed the holes up and like repumped it. And then you got a student debt bubble, you've got a car loan bubble, you got a credit bubble, and you've got generally a stock market bubble, all kind of coinciding at one time. So look, if the contagion takes place, and I hope it doesn't, because if it does, it's going to be real nasty for everybody. But if a contagion happens and all these bubbles pop together, I mean, we're in for a nasty ride. I mean, it's not going to be pretty. Just to be prepared, go read the stuff from Sean Bradley on the Anti-Media. Thank you all for tuning in. Aaron, Emma, thanks for joining me. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Peace out. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.